pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
2 minute drill brought to you by our friends at Hen House. Everything you need for the big game, it's at Hen House. Great, great selection of party trays there in the delicatessen, or make your own there with the meats and cheeses you can get right there in the delicatessen. But they've got it all, sushi, great dips. The seven-layer dip is absolutely phenomenal and one of our regular gets for when we're getting together for a festivity. You can also check out the meat counter. You want to get some meat going, either smoking some ribs, getting the grill going for some burgers. Always great specials. Go to henhouse.com right now or get the app. That is the easiest way to make sure you don't miss any of the specials that are going on each and every week at your neighborhood henhouse. Go to henhouse.com today. Let's get the drill started in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Tim Benz, Pittsburgh Tribune Review, is there, and ESPN 970, Steelers pregame as well. Tim, how are you, my friend? What's going on?
Good, Trent. How you doing?
Very good. What's the feeling on what this season was for the Pittsburgh Steelers? They bounce back, they get in the playoffs, but just an awful first quarter and never able to recover. What do we view this season as if you're a Steeler fan?
A disappointment, a colossal collapse. There's no other prettier way to paint it. I think more and more as the season went along, people in Pittsburgh tended to side with those nationally who looked at the Steelers' start and felt like it was fraudulent. I don't quite agree with that assessment in the sense that, you know, I don't think you can fraud your way to 11-0. Like, how you got those wins, especially the way the Steelers did, beating Tennessee, Baltimore, and Cleveland along the way to get there. You know, there's enough quality wins in there so that you earned your way to 11-0, but it just took about 10, 11 weeks for people to figure out what the Steelers were doing offensively. And it took about that time for the defense to have a few cracks in the armor and injuries caught up to them. And some COVID situations at the end of the season caught up to them on defense as well. So I think that nexus right there is what drove the Steelers' season into a downward plunge.
If Bud Dupree and Devin Bush don't go down, does it end differently?
I think it's more Bud than Devin Bush, to be frank with you. I know a lot of people are trying to retroactively assign the blame of the season to Devin Bush getting hurt, because we've done that once here already and blamed everything in 2016 going wrong on Ryan Shazier getting hurt. But that's not right to do, because the Steelers won their next six games without Devin Bush. And we're also simultaneously acting like Robert Spillane was the next Jack Lambert in his stead. So don't believe that narrative. But going out was a bigger deal, and that was a legitimate problem, because Alex Highsmith is good but not ready, and just not as dynamic or as athletic as Bud Dupree. But I think the issues were just as much on offense as they were on defense, if not more so. So I don't think, even if Bud had been there, I don't think it saved the season. Does it maybe, I don't know, scrounge out an extra win against Washington? Maybe. Do they not collapse so badly against the Browns? Perhaps. But I don't know if it really would have. They definitely would not have gone to Buffalo and beaten them. I can guarantee you that.
So what needs to happen in this offseason? They've signed Dwayne Haskins, and I'm not saying that's the answer, but he's a first-round talent at quarterback that they're going to give a shot to. We know Ben Roethlisberger said he's coming back if they'll have me, which I always loved. 5 years ago, he was talking about retiring, seemingly wanting attention, and now it's like, oh, no, I'm going to be back. Yeah, we know you're going to be back. You're due like $40 million. Of course you're going to be back, for God's sake. At least that's my reaction. Maybe you've got a different opinion on it, but what does this team need to do to get back?
It's not quite $40 million in cash. It's just, I think it's only $19 to $22 million in cash, something like that. So,
okay.
But, hey,
okay.
I mean, it's not. It ain't 100,000. You know, like there's at least 19 million reasons why he'd be coming back. So, the cap number is that high, though. Yeah, the cap number is tragic for the Steelers to deal with. I mean, I think if the cap comes in at something like 175 or 180, he'll be worth like 23% against it. So, if they do that, they are not going to be able to put much around him, and they're going to lose a lot more, and they're going to be worse. and they're not going to make the playoffs. The only way I see the Steelers making the playoffs, with or without Ben Roethlisberger, and I don't think they'll be able to do it without Ben, they might be able to do it with Ben to the tune of like 8-8, is if there's some sort of dynamic regression with the Ravens and the Browns atop the division, and they steal a couple wins from those teams that I don't think they're going to get otherwise next year. That's the only way I see them getting to the playoffs. I don't see them getting in as division champ. I see them getting in at best, as the seventh seed at barely 500.
All right, does the collapse? You know, a lot of people had heat on Mike Tomlin. The 11-0 start got everybody off his back, but does the way it ended put the heat back on him? Is next year a make or break year for him?
I think if things go horribly bad, he could be out. But I think if you get the kind of season I just described, and they don't look terrible, and they don't make a move somewhere between now and next season to replace Roethlisberger, I think they would actually be just as inclined to keep Tomlin, to be a bridge to see if he can get it done with his next new quarterback, because that's how loyal they are, the coaches around here. Hey, look at Nolan Cowher. You know, they both got to go through at least one quarterback, if not two, before they made a move on the coach. And, you know, obviously they both went out on their own terms or close to it. I don't know that they would have Tomlin go out without giving him a chance to get into the next era of a quarterback and give him the keys to the car again with a new guy in the passenger seat, and that being a brand-new quarterback. And I don't think that's going to be Haskins or Rudolph.
Okay. All right. So what would be your prediction of what next year will be?
Somewhere between 6-10, 7-9, probably somewhere in the 6-10 neighborhood. Then Roethlisberger retires, and then they give Tomlin a chance to surf through the next year, maybe two, and see where they are. I don't think it'll ever get to the point where it was Cowher getting three straight non-playoff years. At that point, it would be 8 years without a playoff win. I don't think they'd do that for Tomlin, but I bet you he gets at least one more, unless it really goes tragically bad, like 4-12, 3-13 bad.
Tim Benz in Pittsburgh. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Stay safe and have yourself a great weekend.
Great talking to you again. Been a long time. Let's do it again soon.
It's up to you, New York.
Dan Schwartzman, D Sports Media in New York, New York. Dan, how are you, sir?
I am great, Seren. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. New era of Mets baseball. They got a new owner. Everybody's excited. They're splashing around cash. And then the general manager goes and gets himself fired by being a horse's ass or worse. What's the reaction from Mets fans?
You know what? Pretty universal that the Mets made the right move. Cohen did it quick, and rightfully so. Heck, people are like, they should have fired him the night before. And I think the Mets did handle it well, letting it go to the morning. You know, they investigated all through the night before making that decision. And I think that is good for the team. Look, you have to have a zero-tolerance policy, obviously. I actually blame the Cubs more, or even maybe the Diamondbacks. For Jared Porter to go from Chicago to Arizona, and this doesn't come out, and then goes from Arizona to New York with a high-profile job, I don't blame the Mets. I think they did their due diligence. How are they supposed to know about this when it was not public? You know, the accuser did not come out and make this public. Obviously, she went directly to a reporter, and rightfully so. And I think the Mets, as soon as this came out, did the right thing in getting rid of Jared Porter, ending that book right then and there.
Yeah. All right. Where do they go now? Who do they turn to?
That's a great question, because think about this. If you were the second or third place finisher for the job, aren't you slightly insulted that you didn't get that job? And here they come begging for you to now take the job. So the question becomes, you know, they have an internal candidate, and I forgot his first name, I think something Scott. He had been, I guess, one of the finalists. He had taken over as assistant GM. Maybe they elevate him. There's also talk about maybe bringing in a GM retread. I don't know if that's the right move to make. Sandy Alderson obviously has a clue as to how to run teams. He's done it for years, Seren. So maybe he's a guy that in the interim will take that job, take on those responsibilities, and they do a thorough search and make sure they get a qualified, good candidate in here.
Let's go to the NBA. Kyrie Irving is back. Do we have an idea of what all is going on in his world? Listen, I'm not trying to be funny here. Mental health is real, and if that's what the guy's struggling with, I mean, that's a serious issue. How stable is him being back, right? Like, is there a feeling that he is back and going to be playing, or that this is something that could be touch and go the rest of the year?
You know, it's interesting. You bring up mental health. I don't know if it is a mental health issue. And I think for people, they're not used to him, but people that have thrown that around, you know, I don't think he's the one that's ever said, I have a mental health issue I have to deal with, right? So I think people are kind of labeling him that, and that may be dangerous. Because for people who actually have mental health, I think it's unfair to just label Kyrie that. And if he actually has it but hasn't made that public, I'm not sure it's fair people actually label him with that until he comes out and says something. From all indications, Seren, he was upset with what happened at the Capitol and decided that was more important to kind of sit out, I guess, and not play because he was upset by that. Then he had birthday parties for his sister and I guess maybe his father as well. Or I believe it was his father. You know, their birthday parties were right around the same time, and he had gone to that. Look, people are scratching their head wondering, does he want to play basketball or not? He's, what, 28 years old, incredibly talented. There's no question about that. But when it comes down to it, there's no stability when Kyrie Irving is playing because tomorrow he can literally walk out and pull this again. And the Nets have no recourse because I think they handled it poorly the first time. Steve Nash doesn't want to rock the boat. He doesn't want to upset a guy like Kyrie Irving because he's so good. But he kind of got thrown under the bus because the GM never came out and made a forceful statement. I think the Nets handled it very poorly and kind of let Kyrie handle it himself rather than the Nets taking forceful action to say, A, this is right or wrong, whatever it is. Did you ever hear Marks come out and say anything? I didn't.
Is first-year head coach, is Nash in over his head?
I don't want to say that yet. I do think he handled the Kyrie situation relatively well for a first-year coach. To be fair, though, he's a Hall of Fame point guard who is well-respected around the league, so I'm not sure he should be put in the same category as some lowly assistant coach who kind of gets elevated to the job. But I do think he is a little bit in over his head because the expectations are so high when you have three legit superstars and a pretty darn good bench player as well, or two with Harris and Dinwiddie as well. So I think when you walk into a situation, they bring in James Harden, and you're a rookie head coach with the expectation of winning a championship or bust, yeah, he might be in a little over his head right now.
Yeah, I think that's a tough spot. I mean, I don't know. There's only probably a handful of coaches that wouldn't be in over their head in trying to keep these three personalities together. We'll see if he can do it. It'll be a great accomplishment if he does. Robert Salah, popular choice for the Jets, or did they want an offensive guy to try to develop a quarterback?
First of all, as a Jets fan, I got tingly all over watching him at that press conference. Oh, what a beautiful sight. Let me tell you something, Seren. I mean, the bottom line is this is a move that's been universally praised, not just by Jet fans in the media that is always skeptical of covering the Jets, but I think around the NFL as well. Richard Sherman comes out and makes the Jets a destination spot, saying that Deshaun Watson should get his, you know what, over to New York as quick as possible to the Jets, kind of tells you the respect that people around the league and admiration they have for Robert Salah. I think for Joe Douglas, it shows that he is, in fact, a GM that knows what he's doing. Instead of reaching for that quarterback whisperer, which Adam Gase is supposed to be, or just the offensive mind, because, well, the Jets need help on offense, they got the best possible candidate. And, Seren, answer this for me. He was a hot candidate, right? Robert Salah was interviewed by pretty much every opening out there. For him to pick the Jets, which really no one expected the hot candidate to want to go to New York and coach the Jets, don't you think it puts the Jets on a pedestal in terms of maybe it's not as bad an organization as reporters out there want you to think it is when they can get a hot candidate to come here and not settle for the bottom of the barrel like an Adam Gase? To me, that was such a big move for Jet fans to see that it's not hopeless here because a hot candidate actually wanted this job more than any other jobs. You know, it's a huge thing.
Was Eric Bieniemy in the final stages of this one? Was he a guy that was strongly considered? Did you ever hear anything about him?
No, I don't believe he was. I think, you know, he got the interview. I think the Jets did not want to wait around because there were good candidates for after the Kansas City Chiefs playoff run ends. It came down to Robert Salah and Arthur Smith, who obviously got the Falcons job. The Jets decided Salah was the guy when he left their building on a Thursday to fly down and interview with the Eagles. Apparently that's when they kind of said, you know what, he's our guy, he checks every box. And they made the offer the next day, and of course the news broke. I don't believe Bieniemy was a guy that made it to that level of a Salah or an Arthur Smith. The Jets have never indicated he was.
Okay. Number two pick, what do they do with it?
Woo, that's a great question. All right, let's put it this way. At the press conference, you hear Joe Douglas, you hear Robert Saleh, they praise Sam Darnold. A, do they actually believe it? B, are they trying to raise his trade value? I think the Jets have incredible options at pick number two. If a team loves Justin Fields or Zach Wilson and Joe Douglas doesn't, they can trade it for a plethora of draft picks. They have 18 picks over the next 2 years and a ton of cap room as well. Or if they fall in love with a Justin Fields or a Zach Wilson, they can take that player at number two. Now, real quick, though, remember when Joe Douglas is part of Ozzie Newsom's front office with the Ravens, they won a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco, and he had a great postseason run. You know as well as I do, Joe Flacco, at his best, was a slightly above-average quarterback, right? Maybe the Jets view Sam Darnold as a guy that can play that Joe Flacco role if he has that great supporting cast on the defense and offensive weapons as well. And maybe they think they can win with Sam Darnold because they can use these picks and that cash to kind of build that great supporting staff around a coaching staff that they really feel confident can take this team to the next level. So good news for the Jets is they haven't kind of given any sort of indication, which means teams have to guess, are they going to pick a quarterback or go with Darnold? And if they're going to take a quarterback, then a team like in Atlanta may have to give up a lot to move up to that number two to take the guy they really like.
Dan Schwartzman in New York. Great stuff, buddy. Stay healthy and have a great weekend.
You as well. Talk soon, Seren.
It's where we find Eitan Shander, Sports Map Radio, 1480 Fox Sports The Gambler in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Eitan, how are you, sir?
You know, I go back with Dan Schwartzman to my first two radio jobs. He was the one who hired me from Atlantic City where we worked together. And when he was the program director in Princeton, he got me work in Nashville. What a small world this crazy business is.
Yep, it sure is. There's only a few of us dumb enough to stay in it, that's for sure. We know that. Hey, tell me about the Eagles going with Matt Sirianni. We know Matt from when he was a receivers coach, quality control, and then receivers coach here under Todd Haley. But this is a name from off the radar screen. I can't imagine in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, this is a popular choice.
No, and to be honest with you, it wasn't a popular choice to move on from Doug Peterson. And the Philadelphia Eagles wanted to slam the door on the Peterson era as fast as humanly possible because the owner and the quarterback didn't like him. So now the Philadelphia Eagles went out and they hired Frank Reich light on the surface. But in reality, Sirianni isn't Frank Reich light. He's Doug Peterson. Everything we hear about him is he's a player's coach. He won't ride guys hard. He's definitely buddy-buddy. He'll grow command in the locker room. You just had a guy like that. But the owner couldn't deal with the Doug Peterson ask of having Press Taylor on his staff. So Peterson was canned, and now here's Sirianni. And lastly on that, Seren, nobody wants this job. Nobody wants this job, and I don't blame a soul because the Philadelphia Eagles are so dysfunctional that they're also pinning any coach's success on fixing Carson Wentz.
Tell me, have they had the press conference on this?
Not that I know. I don't even think it's official. I'm still
really?
Waiting
okay.
for Carson
okay.
Wentz to say something about Doug Peterson getting fired. I don't even think nothing is official yet.
Nick Sirianni was, I mean, a guy that I've heard a lot of people mention his name, but I am surprised at this direction. But is that, I mean, yeah. at what point do the fans, like you mentioned it, it's just like, you know, he tried something new with Chip Kelly. You talked about how Chip Kelly was like, oh, God, this place is dysfunctional. So then they went back to the Andy Reid thing, got Doug Peterson. Now they're just going back, well, Frank Reich was good. Let's go get one of his. I mean, are they just out of fresh ideas?
I don't think they've ever had fresh ideas outside of the Chip Kelly thing. It was the right move. It was just the worst possible person to have that move, which is just the owner sit back, shut up, and let a football-minded person run the organization that's not named Howie Roseman. Unfortunately, it was a disaster because it was Chip Kelly, but I credit Chip. Chip came in and saw how dysfunctional and just ignorant Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman were. He just came in and ran roughshod, just like we saw with Mike Shanahan down in D.C. with Snyder. So now moving forward, you know, Sirianni is charged with the impossible, which is fixing Carson Wentz. And you look around and think, well, who else were the Eagles really looking at? Josh McDaniels coming off the worst year ever as a coordinator, Deuce Staley, who is also inside the organization like Doug Peterson, but didn't really do much or wasn't even going to get a look at from the organization. So nobody even wanted to come here, and that's why Sirianni was given the job, because he doesn't have any options. The Eagles don't have any options. And when the Eagles say this is who your staff is, Sirianni can't budge.
All right. Are the Sixers for real with the way they're playing? And is Joel Embiid going to end up being one of the top MVP candidates?
Yeah, I think so. We were having this conversation about that earlier today, and it's kind of like you don't know which comes first. Is it the NBA has changed so drastically away from the five that even if you do have a talented big, it's not good enough unless that guy is Anthony Davis, who can move from the 4-5 seamlessly? Or have we just not seen a hybrid five like Joel Embiid? Because he does dominate from a physical presence more than Jokic, and he is this specimen at the five who can shoot, who can Euro step, he can put the ball on the floor, he can pass, he can rebound, he can score, he can get to the line. Honestly, and I know I have my Homer goggles on me, but if you listen to me, as you know, with the Philadelphia Eagles, that's the farthest thing I am here in Philly. I love Joel Embiid in taking the next step to his game. His conditioning isn't an issue so far, Soren, and yes, he can be an MVP, and I think the Sixers would have to win the East, which is doable right now, but they're deep too, and they added guys that they didn't have in the last couple of years, and Seth Curry and Danny Green. Ben Simmons is working into his role where he's not expected to be the number two or three scorer, and you still have Tobias Harris, who if he can get you, you know, 18 to 20 a night, this should be one of the top two, if not three, teams in the East. Absolutely.
Yeah they're impressive. That's
they're fun to watch,
right.
Too.
Yes, they are. Yes, they
they're
are.
They're young. They don't care. It's great.
Eitan Shander in Philadelphia. We appreciate it, buddy. Take care of yourself. Have yourself a great weekend.
Saran, anything for you, brother. Have a great weekend, and all the best to you and yours.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Saran Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He was covering the Chiefs the day Patrick Mahomes was born. He was covering the Chiefs the day Mahomes brought the Lombardi Trophy back to Kansas City.
Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years of lifetime.
He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
Adam Teicher brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. You know, for more than a quarter century, Family Leisure has been locally owned and operated right here in Kansas City. They are a family-owned business. Great family folks. They know how important it is to spend great time together with the family. What better way to do it if it's the summer? And now is actually a great time to get yourself a spa or a pool. Get at the front of the list so that you've got the pool set up for when the weather turns warm again. They've got their floor model spa sale going on. It's a great time. Get together and have fun with your family in a pool. Maybe it's in the man cave. What are you waiting for? Whether it's a pool table, air hockey, they've got models on the floor right now. Got a great inventory. Talking about the shuffleboard, the poker tables. Maybe it's the theater seating for watching you, the Chiefs game. You're getting ready to watch the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl. Get yourself some theater seating. Recline. Maybe it's a massage chair for after work. Just come back, sit back, and relax. I'm going to tell you, if you sit in that thing, be careful. If you go out there, if you sit in it, you will want to take it home. It is absolutely, they got several different models. They're absolutely phenomenal. You can get it at Family Leisure. Great folks. Call. Ask any questions you got, 877-775-3478. You also can just stop in there at K10 and Ridgeview. Mention 810. Save even more. They're online at familyleisure.com. That's familyleisure.com. Let's talk to Adam Teicher as he is on our T-Mobile guest line. Adam, how are you?
Good, Jen. How are you doing today?
Doing very good. How do you like how the Chiefs announced Patrick Mahomes has cleared protocol? Andy Reid said that he is in the concussion protocol along with Bashaud Breeland. They bring out Travis Kelce, And then I think he was second, wasn't he? Where's my little notebook? Was he second?
Yeah, I think he was.
I think he was second. And then first thing, like, we pretty much know, okay, if they're putting him on, then he's going to be ready to go. And first question, hey, what's the deal? He's like, yep, just cleared concussion protocol. How about a little bit of gamesmanship there out of Coach Reed?
Nothing like a little drama from the Chiefs today. But, hey, it's all good, right? He's going to play, and we're going to – I think this is going to be a great game on Sunday. I really do.
Great game in the sense that the Chiefs are going to roll, or a great game like it could go either way and it's going to be
a competitive game and coming down to the end. And I think both teams going to play well. So I'm looking forward to this one. I really am. I felt like the Chiefs were the huge favorites in last year's AFC Championship game. This year, I don't know. You know, I feel like they're the better team, but going to have to play better than they have. Going to need to put together a full game, I think, more than they have lately. We haven't seen one of those from the Chiefs in a long time. So, but if they can put this together, I think they're the better team and they're going to win.
Last 10 years, teams that played each other in the regular season and then meet for a second time in the postseason, the team that won the first game is 32-10. I think that's right. No, 32-18 overall. When they are at home, so in other words, the higher seed, they are 23-10. So that bodes well for the Chiefs, right? I like that. Super Bowl champions,
yep.
Defending Super Bowl champions that reached the conference championship game are 3-1 in this round. So that bodes well for the Chiefs on that front. You know, I agree that they, when you say they need to play better, weren't they playing better other than Harrison Butker and the trio involved with kicking it? Weren't they playing better against Cleveland until Patrick Mahomes went down?
Oh, I thought it was a great first half. I'll take that first half. They play the way they did in the first half against the Bills. They'll win by double digits, I think. I mean, that was a fantastic first half. I mean, defense was all over the Browns in the first half. And then the second half, not so much. You know, it's 2 second half touchdown drives. You know, the Mahomes injury certainly had a hand in this. You know, the Chiefs only getting a field goal in the second half, certainly that was a factor there. But I'm looking for the Chiefs to finish off the game. You know, I mean, I feel like that game we saw from the Chiefs on Sunday, we've seen that from the Chiefs before. We saw it against Tampa, you know, big fourth quarter lead and had to hold on at the end. And we saw it against Miami, big fourth quarter lead, and they had to hang on in the end, but, you know, New Orleans. So I feel like we've seen that game from the Chiefs before. I want to see them finish a game. I mean, get a lead and hang on to it. You know, so I want to see a full game from the Chiefs. I think that's important that they do that. I don't think they can get away with playing like they did for a whole half against the Browns and beat the Bills. I don't think I think the Bills are better than that. So yeah, we'll see. But I feel like it's going to take more from the Chiefs than we've seen, certainly than what they gave the other day.
Do you think they've got more to give, though?
Yeah, I think. Oh, yeah. I think they're only scratching the surface, I think, of what they are. I mean, we know they're more dynamic than they've been offensively. I mean, I really thought they were off to a huge, big offensive game Sunday. You know, I was thinking, wow, your prediction of 37-14 or 37-17 is going to look pretty good here, because, you know, the Chiefs scored those two early touchdowns and then nothing. Three field goals. And, you know, again, the Mahomes injury probably had something to do with that. But I'm just looking for more for them. I do think they're more dynamic than that offensively. They can be more consistent offensively. And defensively, yeah. I mean, we from largely the same group, we saw it last year. This time of year, you know, they were playing great defense this time of year last year. So I do think that there's more in for the Chiefs to squeeze out of what they've got than what they've been doing.
Yeah. How about the defense? I think the defense is playing really well. I had this discussion with Danny Klingscale earlier. Yeah, he was right. Usually he and I end up arguing over semantics, and we're pretty much on the same page. But, you know, I think they're playing, I use the term very good, right? Not great, but very good. And I'll stand by that. How well do you think the defense is playing right now?
I wouldn't go as far as you, probably. I think, you know, they're somewhere in between 2018 and 2019, and probably closer to the 2019 than they are to, you know, the way they were playing 2 years ago. But I'm just looking for consistency. You know, the points are the proof in the pudding, right? And the fact that they, 14 points against Atlanta and 17 points against Cleveland in the last two games, real games. You know, that's a pretty good thing, particularly last week. But I'm not seeing that consistent pass rush I'm looking for. I'm not seeing better play in the red zone that I'm looking for. I mean, they're still not making teams kick enough field goals. I'm looking for more three and outs to get the ball back to the offense more often. Maybe I'm asking for too much. Maybe that's getting a little greedy there. But I want to see some of these things from the Chiefs defensively, because we saw them last year. You know, they were so good at this time of year last year. You know, you think back to that Houston game. Okay, they fell down 24-0 with, and let's face it, the defense wasn't very guilty in that. There was the early touchdown by Houston, and then there was a blocked punt, and then there was a turnover on a punt return. And so the defense really had no hand in that. But and then the Chiefs reel off 41 straight points. Well, if a team's going to score 41 straight points, its defense is doing something right in the interim, right? And then you look at that AFC Championship game. They just shut down Derrick Henry in the second half. The Titans got one touchdown in the second half, and that was that garbage touchdown kind of at the end after the Chiefs had sort of sewn it up. And then, you know, the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl, the 49ers couldn't do anything. So I'm looking for that kind of game from the Chiefs tomorrow. You know, they don't have to dominate against Josh Allen. That's a pretty tough ask. But I'm looking for more from them than what we've seen the last couple games. And really recently, I'm looking for them to finish a game out, play better late in the game, that kind of thing.
I definitely would like – I think everybody would like them to not be giving up those touchdowns when they're up big. But they were up big against the Saints. They were up big against the Dolphins, and yes, they ultimately and the Bucks. It ended up being tighter. They were up solid on the Broncos. They only gave up 16 to the Broncos, but they're a poor offensive team. How about, like, we're a little spoiled off the last six games of last year, because the last six opponents last year weren't that good.
Nope.
I mean, maybe they're playing. I'm of the opinion they are back at the 19 level. They just played better teams.
Well, you may be right. I mean, there may be something to that, and certainly Buffalo would be one of those better teams. But I'm just looking for a little more consistency from week to week. You know, something you can hang your hat on here, and maybe they'll deliver that on Sunday. We'll see. But I feel like, you know, some of these games the Chiefs had to win, including the Browns game, the Chiefs had to have a really on-point offensive drive to sort of put the game away. You know, these four-minute drives they've been delivering have been spectacular. They did it against Tampa. They did it against Miami. They did it against New Orleans, and they're doing it against Cleveland again. And those have been great. But they're not going to be the ones who make the plays every single time. So sooner or later, the other guy is going to make the play at the end. And is that going to be, you know, the thing that gets the Chiefs beat? You know, we'll see. But I'd like to see them be better defensively and be better at holding on to leads than they've been.
Damn, Teicher, you're a tough guy to make happen.
I'm greedy, man. They set the bar pretty high last year. I realize that. I'm being a little greedy here. There's no doubt. But I think they have it in them. If they can play the way they did for the first three quarters, say, against Tampa Bay, or if they, like, they played the first half of the game defensively against the Browns, it's in them. They can do this.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I'm waiting for them to deliver. I'd rather see they led, what, 19-3 at halftime. But I'd rather see a 31-17 finish than what we saw. I mean, I feel like that's in them. And it might take a more complete game for them to beat this team they're playing on Sunday.
Yeah. I think, listen, like I said, I think they were well on their way. I think the switch was flipped against the Browns, particularly if you put those 4 points on the board and you're sitting there at 23-10 with Mahomes moving the ball down the field at that time. And I think the fury was going to be unleashed. I think, and I actually love the national narrative of, if they call that helmet to helmet on Dan Sorensen, you know, the Browns win this game. I love that. That is fuel for the Kansas City Chiefs. If they're a tired, worn out, like, you know, when you're working out, right, like this is past experience for me because clearly there's not a lot of that going on in my world these days. But when you're working out and you're kind of tired, but then your favorite song comes on, you know, or one of those, you know, pump me up jams, you get that adrenaline, you actually do get a boost. And I do worry that this team is tired. First of all, I think every team is tired. I think the pandemic probably took more out of all these teams than we realize. But then the shortened offseason and having the target on your back, first time, you know, learning what it means to be a Super Bowl champ. I think it got easier for the Patriots because they've been there, done that. Like, okay, we know what this is like. And maybe that should be scary on the NFL, that it'll be easier for the Chiefs next year and the year after that and the year after that, because now they not only – you know, have won it, but they've had the experience of having the target on their back. We'll see. Time will tell on that. But I do think that – I know Mahomes has got some Jordan in him, right? Do you agree with that?
Yep.
That he's got red ass. You know, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 against the Bears that he counted out. Like, okay, I went 10th, and this guy, this jackass went 2. Okay, yeah, here it is. The 1, 2, 3, 4, he counted out on his fingers and just stared at him. And like, to me, he was making sure the camera caught him, staring at the 4. Okay, I'm 4th in the Players' Choice Awards, and Lamar Jackson's number 1 when he beat the Ravens. That's Jordan-esque. Now, and he always poo-poos it when we ask him about it, and he always is very shows great sportsmanship all around. But there is clearly a massive fire that burns in that guy, and I think there's a fire that burns in this team. And so I really do think the national media is kind of doing the motivation job for this team. I started this week going, yep, I think this is a field goal game. Could go either way, but I'll take Mahomes and his magic with the clock, that if he gets the ball with 4 minutes, he'll take 4 minutes to score. He's so good, not only will he score, but he'll burn all the clock. He and Reed will burn all the clock, and so they'll get away with it. So now I'm starting to think, and maybe this is my dumbass Chiefs fandom, I'm starting to think the beating is going to be laid on the Bills.
Yeah, well, I don't agree with that, but I think the Chiefs are in a good place, and I do. Think
why do we book
team.
You again, Tyshire? I mean,
Well,
what's
I'm
the deal?
I'm the bad news. I'm
it's
the
my bad,
on the fire.
Thanks, Jed.
I do feel like the Chiefs are in a good place here. I do. I love Travis Kelce's answer today. You were on the Zoom. He talked about, or he was asked about. You know, what's your advice to some of the younger guys who maybe haven't played in a big game at this level? And he said, yeah, you know, just be you, you know, and feel like you belong. You know, he acknowledged that early in his career, he kind of went into the playoffs thinking, I don't know if we're good enough to be here. Well, now the Chiefs know they're good enough. They don't have to wonder. I mean, there's no guessing whether they deserve or belong to be here or good enough to beat the Bills. I mean, they know that. So I think the Chiefs are in a pretty good place. I'm just waiting for them to play their game. That's the only thing I'm wondering about here.
And, look, come out and turn the ball over twice. You know, Buffalo go down and get a score, spit the ball at your own 18 or throw a pick six or a sack fumble, return touchdown. I mean, all those things can – you know, change the dynamics of a game. I always go back to that 94, I think it was, or the 90 end of the 94 season, 49ers-Cowboys game, where the Niners, and they had a great team, you know, they went on to win, but the Cowboys turned it over twice and were staring down the barrel at 21-0 and, you know, fought back to lose by 10 points, I think, or 14, but you know, they just couldn't get over the hump. Those games can happen, right? And maybe that'll happen here for the Buffalo Bills, but I really do think that, you know, the kind of the narrative, the way I've spun it is last, you know, and when you haven't won a championship, you blow some people out because you're trying to prove to yourself that you're good enough to win a championship, right? Along the way, you're trying to prove that, hey, we're as good as the Patriots. And then once you've proven, yeah, we're champions, you don't really feel a need to add on, right? Okay, this one's done. Let's move on. And that's how the regular season felt to me. That's how those, you know, not finishing those other teams felt. Because in all those games, in all of them, right, they left the Raiders 20-some-odd seconds. But in all the other games, they finished in victory formation.
So
I think the closeness of the games is being overrated. I think they did what they needed to do to get out of Dodge. And now is when they know they're really being measured.
Yep. No, there's something to be said for that. I just feel like to end those games that you talked about in victory formation and really go even in the Raiders game, which they didn't, but they had to score a touchdown late with, 25 seconds left or something like that to win the game. They've had to do everything right in those fourth quarters to win those games. And credit to them, they did it. I'm not taking anything away from them. I'm just saying that's hard to do on a consistent basis. And sooner or later, the other guy is the guy going to be making the play. So they need to be careful with that. I think that's a pretty hot fire, and they're going to get burned by it sooner or later. So I just feel like they need to take care of business better late in games and not put themselves in those situations.
I would agree. I definitely think that is true, because these are all playoff teams, and they're all teams that are, you know, win or go home mode. So you're going to get everything they got. But I think they're capable of it, and I think they're now ready to do it. And they know that they're win or go home. So I think you will see it. Adam, before I let you go, give me your prediction on the game. Who wins? What score?
I got the Chiefs. I think it's 27-21, I think is what I've got. So I'll take the Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl again. I think they're the better team, and I think they'll finish this one off strongly and go to the Super Bowl again.
You heard it. Teicher likes the Chiefs minus the points and the under. Book it if you don't win. It's Adam Teicher at ESPN that you take out your frustrations.
There you go.
Adam, great stuff, buddy. Really appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you again next week either way.
Good stuff, man. Thanks, man. Talk to you later.
All right. Adam, he's the best, covering the Chiefs since 1994, I think. Sometimes I forget. 1994. Started covering the Kansas City Chiefs. He is the senior NFL writer here in Kansas City and still the rock of coverage of the Kansas City Chiefs. Does a phenomenal job. We'll take a break here in the program. Come back at your end of the hour answer. Still got our need to know to come. Going to talk to Kevin Harlan, the great Kevin Harlan, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The program with Soren Petro.
I don't like any of that stuff. Most people like it. I don't like it.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. What is the highest point total for the losing team in an AFC or NFC championship game? It is 34. Patriots against the Colts back in 2006. Chiefs have the third highest, their 37-31 loss to the Patriots in 2018. Second highest, 33. Denver beat Cleveland 38-33 back in 87. So three teams have scored 30 and lost in a conference championship game.
Great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. You can get it right now. Go to jazzkitchen.com. Check out that incredible menu of the finest seafood anywhere around. That is Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Three locations, Independence. That is I-70 and 291 there by the Med Center, the original Jazz. And, of course, out at the Legends. We will take a break when we come back. We'll give you the things you need to know. And, of course, Kevin Harlan, he'll have the call right here on 810 of the Packers and Bucks. We're your home of the National Football League, both conferences.
The first end of the hour question, brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, 2012 All-Star Futures game at Kauffman Stadium. Name the two starting pitchers in that game. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.